Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 4th, 2016. Happy birthday, America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Good. Celebrating our future independence from fossil fuels.
You are on the game, on your game, my friend. Well, speaking of independence from things, how appropriate that we want to discuss the recent vote in the British Isles, commonly called the Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, many bits and bytes and pixels have been spilled over the Brexit already.
Yes.
Right? But from our perspective, we want to talk about What does the United Kingdom leaving the European Union mean for climate hawks and the climate program in general?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's a big. So I first of all, I'm going to inoculate myself, DR, by saying that because I'm in the midst of a historic, this is like being in the middle of the French Revolution and
exactly.
Trying to figure out what's going on, right?
Exactly.
So please, I hope the history will forgive everything we say here.
Mm-hmm.
So, DR, you and I have spoken. There's lots of contradictory kind of opinions, but let me just set up the players here. So the United Kingdom, which of course is England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland,
mm-hmm.
Are part of the European Union, and they are now going to pull out of the European Union. But when they were still in the European Union, they signed up to the Paris Accord, the Paris Agreement, the Paris Climate Agreement that you
mm-hmm.
and I talked about so much last December, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you have one of the biggest countries in the European Union, which is one of the biggest countries in the Paris Agreement, pulling out. Basically
mm-hmm.
throwing a hand grenade into the whole, that's a terrible reference, I'm sorry. But, you know, basically messing everything up
mm-hmm.
by pulling out. And in particular, we have talked we've said in the past that each country and the Paris Agreement made a commitment called the Individually Determined National Contribution, which was how much the EU was going to reduce its carbon emission.
Mm-hmm.
And now that the UK is pulled out, what does that mean for that carbon reduction contribution, right? I mean, it's really like, what do you do with that?
It's a queen size headache, isn't it? I mean, there is some contradictory views. There was a great piece by Chris Mooney in the Washington Post suggesting that this portends a lot of bad things for the Paris Climate Agreement, noting that the UK was pushing the EU for the strongest possible, you know, carbon reductions, even though there have been other articles suggesting that the EU was a laggard in this respect.
Uh-huh.
And yet there is a completely different take by Nat Keane of the Environmental Defense Fund, in which he stated, quote, a British exit from the EU would not have any effect on the formal architecture of the Paris Climate Agreement, which was approved last December by more than 190 countries and has been signed by 177, including each of the EU member states, unquote. So Mr. Keane is suggesting that's not that big of a deal. Mr. Mooney is suggesting that this is a big bleeping deal, to quote Joe Biden. And it's going to be interesting because, again, you know, it didn't really have to happen. As a number of news stories have come out, that there are a lot of people who voted for the Brexit, and boy, does that sound like a bad breakfast cereal, doesn't it? Brexit. who apparently literally did not know what they were doing, did not know what they were voting for. It was just this sort of mad fist shaking, stick it to the man type vote.
Right, right.
And the man they stuck it to was themselves.
They took that pitchfork and they sat on it, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think, but so I think it will be an interesting thing. And if, as we say, I mean, this is all happening literally in real time. But I know that the even if the first round of so as you remember, the Paris Agreement was predicated on this idea that every 5 years, every country would come back with more aggressive promises to reduce carbon. And so now, 5 years from now, they're going to go back, but the UK will not be in the EU. So how does that play out? And I guess it's interesting, now that I think of it, I'm sure that the very smart negotiators in Paris last December, I mean, they could not have imagined that every country in 2015 would continue to exist for the next 100 years, that there would be some change in the national identity of places. I said, there must be some mechanism in the Paris Accord to accommodate the idea that, you know, what used to be, I won't make up any funny names, but what used to be one country has now split and become two others or something, right? So anyway, so there's the Paris Agreement, which either is or is not up for grabs, right?
And Mooney's piece noted that there is a concern that other member states of the EU, which aren't so gung-ho about taking action on climate change, and Poland was one country cited in particular, will try to use their expanded influence now that the UK is out to start, you know, fooling around with the EU's commitments, and that could obviously cause some degree of problem. It'll be interesting if other states within the EU who are, you know, still motivated will sort of push back against the member states that aren't as motivated, and if the EU can still demonstrate a strong commitment upholding their end of the Paris deal.
Right. I mean, it's again, I've seen the same thing. There's this, so the EU was a bit of a, was a leader, or still is, the European Union. The question is, was the United Kingdom a major actor within the EU to drive the EU's aggressive stance, right? Or was it not? And again, I'm not sure we can find two articles that say two opposite things. But generally speaking, I think the UK was thought of as being one of the more aggressive climate hawks within the European Union, and now they're out. So where does that leave, as you say, where does that leave the EU itself?
And there's still, you know, there are still a number of stories, particularly in The Guardian, by various UK officials saying that, you know, the UK is not going to diminish its commitments. But again, that remains to be seen based on what sort of political changes now happen in the UK. And we obviously know that the sort of drive to pull out of the EU was driven, was led by people who also happened to be denialists.
Well, and that, so you've got the impact of the withdrawal on the Paris Agreement. Then you could say, what's the impact of the UK's withdrawal from the EU? And then the question is, within the United Kingdom, from what, I mean, of course, I listen to NPR all the time, but I mean, it sounds like they're in complete, I mean, Mr. Corbyn is, won't resign, and Mr. Cameron has resigned, and Mr. Boris Johnson decided he doesn't want to play as of this morning, right? But it seems as if, and you're quite right, much of the stuff that I've seen says that the climate denial industry in the United Kingdom was tightly linked to this Leave campaign. Right, they're all in the same building.
And note the comparison that Peter Sinclair has noted between denialism and bigotry, and we have also noted the sort of the bigotry that drove the exit campaign as well. That a lot of these deniers are also sort of people with an attitude that believes that, you know, they're the sort of people who believe that hate trumps love, so to speak. And you see this the sort of these bizarre remarks that they make, incoherent sort of scorn for reality, scorn for facts. Again, you see the same parallel with some of the stuff going on in the United States, and you see the horror that is resulting. I mean, the United Kingdom could end up well being, to use the title of that old No Doubt album, a tragic kingdom, based on
But I mean, for my money, it's the fact that Boris Johnson and the Leave people were totally shocked and without a plan, without any kind of response, after they won, means that they were not really serious, that it was all this political game they could play. And then when they won, they're like, oh my God, what do we do now? And they start backtracking on the promises they made. And And I think you're quite right. It's a lot of the stuff was, I guess, one of the classic posters was a whole bunch of Syrian, I suppose, men, Syrian refugees, long line, you know, mm-hmm. looking to get into England. And that was the thing that they were most effective in, under the false promise that immigrants could no longer come into the United Kingdom after they left the EU, which I guess on mm-hmm. the day after the vote, they said, oh, so sorry, we didn't really mean that lie. That lie's not true.
Exactly. They're pushing this idea that essentially they were going to sort of build a wall of sorts, trying to keep immigrants out. And that turned out to be complete nonsense. And just think of all the economic pain and all the ecological pain that's going to be caused as a result of people like Boris Johnson. You know, the residents of the UK will need some Johnson & Johnson to see what all the pain that's being caused to.
But I think Joe Rome of Climate Progress, right? Mm-hmm. Think Progress, Climate Progress, that blog, he makes the point, which is credible at a reasonable level, which is to say mm-hmm. that if you think the Brexit vote went the way it did because of somewhat irrational fears over being inundated by Syrian refugees, mm-hmm. and you also accept the fact that the whole Syrian crisis is driven at least in part, not totally, but at least in part by climate. Mm-hmm. And you say, okay, in a sense, this is the disruption, the political disruption that the world faces from climate change. Because mm-hmm. believe me, a million people moving out of Syria, dreadful as it is nothing compared to when 100 million people try and leave Bangladesh, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, anyway, so...
And it forces us to ask, you know, as we have more climate refugees, you have to ask, are people going to respond with reason or with racism? And as we've seen with the Brexit thing, too many people seem to have responded with the latter instead of the former.
Well, I think that Joe Rome's point is that even in advanced democracies, it's pretty fragile, right? The stability people have. So then there's that aspect of the Brexit vote. Then there's another aspect, which I think is, shall we say, more global, a bigger question. And that mm-hmm. is to say that you can look at the vote in England as a vote against globalization, in quotation marks, however mm-hmm. you define me, basically the connections between companies and having concerns that go beyond your immediate country. And of course, mm-hmm. from a climate hawk perspective, I'm sure everyone gets what that connection is. But this was a vote against that kind of globalization. We see some of the hints of that, unfortunately, here in the United States. We have some of the mm-hmm. same kind of anti-global cooperation stuff going on here in our country. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question is, do we, from a climate perspective, is there some connection there? What do you think?
It's a fascinating thing, and I think back to that great book by Naomi Klein, This Changes Everything, talking about the connection between globalization and the climate crisis and, you know, the sort of international trade ethos and what it causes. And it does raise the question of, is there a way to sort of completely abandon that sort of philosophy, or is there a way to sort of do trade and do, for want of a better phrase, and this is fairly awkward to say, a sort of sustainable globalization? Is there such a thing? Mm-hmm. Can you have international trade, international deals, international commerce in a way that doesn't abuse the earth? Can that be done?
I mean, I think that the way you do that, and of course the TPP, mm-hmm. which is an example of this sort of globalization that people in the EU and people in the United Kingdom were rebelling against, and quite frankly, I think you and I, DR, have talked to, that the TPP is a bad idea, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would harken back to what Elizabeth Warren said, is that, you know, if you have a rigged process, you have a rigged outcome. Right? Mm-hmm. If you have an open and transparent process where the indigenous people and labor unions and environmentalists are at the table, in addition to the people that are going to make the money from the corporation, mm-hmm. maybe you can have a sustainable a trade deal that supports sustainability and jobs everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like living in the middle of history, huh?
Living history, indeed.
This is not the first draft. This is the first podcast of history instead of the first draft of history.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. I think that the it's a fascinating that the whole deal of the Brexit and the way it ripples up and down. I mean, this is people would be writing about this for 300 years, right?
Yes,
I mean,
definitely.
It's just profoundly important, and who knows where it's going. And I think you do, DR. I'm expecting you to tell everyone. You got another 30 seconds here.
If it results in severe damage to the Paris Climate Agreement, it could involve things going down while emissions go up.
Yeah. Well, DR, we'll have to leave it there. Let me tell everyone that we'll put up links to what we've discussed on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.net/blog. Please read these links and figure out what you think, because clearly no one really knows what's happening here. Mm-hmm. It is a big scrum. Of course, you can find the podcast on Facebook. It's /massclimateaction. It's there along with a lot of other interesting links. Please like the page, like our show, share it with your friends. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. Of course, you can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So, DR, we are going to close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is a patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist the United States put a price on carbon. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
We should insist that the UK do too as well.
Yeah, well, there you go. Thanks to everyone for listening, and you folks, you climate hawks in the United Kingdom, we love you. Hang in there. We got your back as much as we can. See everybody next week. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.